Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks and Nihei Debiru. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a second to say thanks for supporting the show and to give you a few quick updates. We're working on improving the audio quality and you should see a difference in the shows coming up in the next few weeks. Also, I understand that there's been some technical issues downloading the show on mobile devices. We're working to get this fixed and it should be resolved within the next few weeks. If you're having any other technical issues or have any other questions or comments, please let us know. Email them to choptalkwithnateengland@gmail.com. Thanks. Hey everybody and welcome back to Chop Talk. This is your host, Nate England. Today's show is the third and final part of my interview with Randy Alley. And today's show, Randy and I swap stories about Vietnam. Of course, Randy's stories are a little bit different than mine. And Randy also opens up about how he dealt with some of the issues that he faced after returning from the war. And we wrap up the show with a couple more skydiving stories, and Randy tells us how he met his wife, Linda. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show.
This is the, he's like, this is what we had to do to get by, because there was no food. And the other people are starving, so they had to get by with whatever they had.
That was pretty sad.
It was real sad.
Same way with Vietnam.
Yeah. See, I was, I probably saw a different version of Vietnam than you did, I would guess.
Mine was pretty close and upfront personal.
Yeah.
Well, you probably saw the TV version. And,
Well, for me going over there before, all I knew was what I saw, yeah, like you said, on TV and movies, stuff like that. But when I got there, it wasn't, you know, wasn't really what I expected. The first thing is, the majority of the population of Vietnam is all under, I'm not even going to say 30, they're all under 25. There's been a huge baby boom since about 1980. So a lot of the people that are there now don't really, aren't really concerned about the war. It didn't affect them directly. Maybe it affected their parents, but it's not something that sort of is on their mind on a daily basis. I tried to talk to my friend about it, and they're like, oh, we don't even think about it. We don't even care about it, which to me was very strange, because I think here everyone knows about, at least somewhat about, okay, we're in a war in Vietnam. They know
something. Well, you remember YT, the school there, in the AOK. Very important for me to have him on my attack team. Mm-hmm. He was a small boy, and the last helicopter that lifted off the American embassy, him and his 11 brothers and sisters and mom and dad were on that helicopter.
They were on the helicopter?
He was sitting right next to the 50 caliber gunner at the rear door.
Wow.
And I wanted him on my team because I wanted people to know that I don't bear animosity.
Right.
To the Vietnamese people. It wasn't their war.
Right.
We got a guy at work, and I'm not going to mention his name, but we come across the bridge. He's a bridge tender, and he was a Vietnamese guy, and he worked at the shops in Burlington. Of course, you know, when they come over, they get 7 years, no taxes, so he's getting these big checks. And first time he got a check, they had taxes out of him, he about had a fit. And so he was on the bridge, and when I showed my engineer's card to get across the bridge free, I looked at him, and my wife said the expression changed on my face. And the guy looked as much like any Viet Cong as I'd ever seen. He had that mean, hateful, nasty look in his eyes and face. And my wife actually told me, she says, the look in your face scared me. And I guess after you're in that situation, sometimes it just never goes away.
Right. It's there's always going to be something to...
It might be buried, but it never goes away. There's always going to be something that'll trigger that. Like some young show don telling you you're a baby raper and a killer. Oh, I wasn't supposed to bring that up.
That was my job. I was supposed to tell you you're a baby raper and a killer.
But yeah, it was a different experience. And one of the things I found there was the it really feels like everyone's just trying to avoid the government there. And
oh hell, we're trying to do that
here. Yeah, we're trying to do that here, but it felt a little bit more extreme there. For example, if you go in a bookstore, there's a, you know, it's always in the front, there's a section devoted to, you know, the great triumphs of Vietnam and the war and this and that, and there's all these books in this big display. I never saw a single person go in any of that part. They're all in the back, in the different literature parts, the, you know, the internet, the looking for DVDs, guess, or American movies, stuff like that.
I guess what you... You know, I really don't... I had some issues. Actually, 2004. 5 or 6. 2004. I had issues. And when we got ready to go to Okinawa, I wanted to get my passport or my birth certificate out of my mom's cedar chest so I'd get a passport. And in there we found every letter I had written my mother was in that cedar chest tied together with string.
Wow.
And that's just there. In the bottom of the cedar chest over in the corner. And I guess that, and then my decorations had been disappeared. Well, my wife Linda, in her kind and good heart, decided she was going to get these reissued. I told her to forget it. And she went to the congressman and got my decorations reissued. And that had quite an effect on me. I got my service record book, my medical records and stuff. All that came with when I signed a release. I didn't even know what I was signing. She said, don't worry, it's nothing bad.
Right.
Well, she'll never get me to sign anything again unless I read
it. You've learned your lesson.
Yep. You can't even trust a woman anyway. I ought to know that. And it hurt her because it caused me to, I guess, I wouldn't talk to anybody. I wouldn't go to class. I didn't smile. I'd just be sitting there and start crying.
So it brought up all these things you've been sort of...
buried.
Buried, you know, for 20, 30 years 40, at that point.
40 years or better. This is 2004 and I got out of Vietnam in 67.
Wow.
And I just kind of... pushed him in a hole and shut the door.
And this opened that door.
And I'd be running the engine at work and I'd start crying. I'd have to go down to the bathroom, have the conductor run and get my composure back. I had some real issues and I went to see an old family friend and all he said was, yep. He says, I know you're all screwed up when you come back. And he says, you were too frickin' macho to let anybody help you, weren't you? I said, oh yeah. And we had some about 30 sessions together, 25, 30 sessions, and worked it out.
That's good.
It took me 5 attempts to get through Saving Private Ryan. And then after I talked with him, I just sat there and watched it.
It was just a little too realistic for you, or?
Yeah, and I related because I was to what was going on in the movie, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's probably one of the most realistic war movies I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it affected my karate because I could run a kata at home and I wouldn't have any problem. I'd get in a tournament and I'd make a mistake,
mm-hmm.
or something. And after I had those sessions, I started winning, quit making mistakes. Matter of fact, that tournament I won kata, I won weapons, and I won shimbaru, and I won kumite.
Mm-hmm.
First place in all of those that day.
Nice.
Had a cleanup day.
Yeah, what is that? It wasn't even a hat trick. That's a 5, 6?
Something, 4 or 5.
Yeah.
The only thing I didn't compete in was Koshki and Judo.
Mm-hmm. So kind of, before that, you sort of had this thing in the back of your mind. It was a little bit distracting.
What he said was that my mind, the kata reminded me of combat. Put it simply.
Okay.
And didn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's understandable. I can understand.
Right.
I mean, my wife, she thought she had broken me. She was upset.
Because, I mean, obviously she tried to do something.
She tried to do nice. Something really, really nice and good. And
right.
It had a bad effect on me. And she thought she had broken me and wasn't going to get me back. And finally, I just gave up and went and got some help. I knew I was screwed.
That's good.
Well, I've seen enough guys that's had problems and they're too bullheaded to go.
Sure.
I've got one friend that sleeps in a tent in the backyard because he can't stand to be in a house.
Wow.
And he's been that way since he got out of Vietnam.
Wow.
He lives in Florida, fortunately for him.
Yeah, it'd be a little bit rough if he was in Minnesota.
I don't know if he's even still alive. I had one friend down in Texas. I went to see him and had a big map of Vietnam on one wall, his bedroom, and every place we'd had an operation, he had pens and had all kinds of documentary films on Vietnam. And he says, he got shot through the side, and severed his spine, spinal cord, and he killed the guy that got him. And that's all he talked about the whole time I was there. I was there 2 days, and at the end of the second day, I packed my bags and left. I couldn't handle it anymore. That's all he talked about. And they'd go back, well, this is where I got shot. I got the guy that got me. And then he'd go talk about other operating. This is where I am. I was like, God, man, there's a life out here somewhere.
Right.
And he's still living. And that was in the 80s. I went to see him, and he's still living it.
Wow.
Just roar. I don't know whatever happened to him. I was on a medevac plane with him, and he kept yelling at me, and I finally looked down and he says, it's me, Private Roar. And he had no face. His face was all burnt off. He was in a bar in the train.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the B-52 Hustlers crashed and he was burnt. And said they were going to take him to the burn center in Texas and fix him. I said, good.
Yeah.
And I mean, you think about the guys that you knew and stuff, and I can, you know, there was guys that I know got killed. After I got out of the hospital, in Hawaii, they come and ask for people that could type up decorations. So, radio telegrapher I could type.
Mm-hmm.
So I went up there and I'm typing up citations for Purple Hearts, and there's a couple of my friends' names come across. I just got up and walked out. This guy's yelling at me, and I just looked at him and kept walking. He came outside, and he says, what's the matter? Get back in there and start typing. I says, Gunny, I said, I can't do that. I said, I just typed 2 of my friend's citations. I said, I can't do this. Got me a Jeep, take me back to the hospital.
Mm.
I mean, you can't. There's just some times that you just. I don't think I ever told Linda about that. Maybe I did. But, you know, it's just one of those deals, and time goes on.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
I got a couple of Vietnam stories, but they're a little bit different than yours. But when I was over there, everyone gets around on motorbikes. That's how everybody gets around. Yeah. That's it.
Well, we saw that in Okinawa.
Yeah, it's more. Okinawa, it's like, it's a supplement, you know. It's at most, it's 50-50, half cars. There, it's all motorbikes, occasional taxi, and a bus. And I don't know how anyone ever gets anywhere in a bus, because it's just packed. Just solid, the roads are just solid, packed on this thing.
So you had to ride a motorbike?
Had to ride a motorbike. That's the only way to get around. So,
is that anything like the taxi drivers?
It's insane. The Vietnamese are simultaneously the best and the worst drivers in the entire world.
I know when I was there and we went on Liberty, we called them kamikaze cab drivers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When in fact, I took a bus around the southern half. It was an... I said, we got here. Here was the deal. It was five days. Okay, so you got 5 nights in a hotel, decent hotel. Bus transportation is all around the southern end of Vietnam. You got one meal a day, entrance to all the major tourist destinations and stuff like that. How much you think that was?
$100.
$125. $125, all the transportation, food, hotels, the whole, the everything. But when you're on these buses, you couldn't even look out the front window. Because if you looked out the front window, you were constantly, oh God, just panicking and like, you know, subconsciously dodging what's coming in front of you. Because it's just horrible. It's just amazing that more people didn't die on this. Well, here was...
Well, don't you remember when we were in Okinawa, how the cabs were all decorated inside,
yeah,
clean, and the drivers wore white gloves?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, but they drive reasonably in Japan compared to Vietnam. But here I am. We have to get around on this thing. So they go, oh, Nate, you drive this motorbike. I'm like, yeah. God.
Oh, you had one of the motorbikes with a wagon behind it.
No, it's just a motorbike, just a regular motorbike.
How many people were on it?
Me and my friend. Like the girl I was over there whose family I was staying with, and that's it. And I don't know why her parents trusted me to drive her around on this, but they here's your motorbike, go up and down the alley. So I went up and down the alley. Okay, you're fine. Get on the back, let's go. You pulled out, when you go to pull out into traffic in Vietnam, you can't wait for an opening because there's not going to be one.
Yeah, I know.
You just have to kind of go and assume that everyone will adjust. Well, I did that fine across the first lane of traffic, but when I go to speed up to kind of get into there, I had driven this motorbike, like I said, up and down an alley once, and that was by myself, and now this girl was on the back of it, and she's leaning back, and I go to accelerate, pop the wheelie.
Uh-oh.
This thing came up almost vertical.
That got her attention, didn't it?
I have no idea how she did not fall off the back and how I didn't flip this thing backwards. Anyway, I'm like, oh crap. So I let off the accelerator and it drops, and I pull over to the side of the road. I'm like, oh. She's like, what are you waiting for? Let's go. Like, oh, okay.
See, now there's the edge. See, you've been to the edge.
That was the edge. That was beyond.
I had the same thing happen to me. Back in 1968, I had a Bonneville Triumph, and of course it was hopped up. And I was dating this gal, and she'd been on bikes a long time. Her other boyfriend had been a biker, and I just had this work done on the bike, and we left the tavern. At that time, I drank and rode, and we left the tavern, and she was being a smart ass, and I says, "You got a hold?" And I says, she says, "Nah, you couldn't pop a wheelie." And I had a field jacket on, and I hit that thing, and that bike went right up on the back wheel, and I went a block and a half before I let it down. My buddy said her head was about 6 inches off the pavement, and all she had a hold of was a tail end of my field jacket. That bike come down, I let it down at a stoplight, and she started beating on me. I was only glad that night I'd wore a helmet, and I was glad because it was a little chilly. Man, she was beating on me. I just sat there laughing. She got done, and her hands were hurt from hitting my helmet. I turned around and looked at her, and I says, "Want to do it again?" Yeah, there was that edge.
There's the edge.
But see, when I got there, I played it. Wham, wham, wham.
You expected to be there.
I expected to be.
I did not.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not sure where I am or how.
But that was the first one. And you know, I could have just easily went right on over, but I caught it.
Right.
And then I started playing it. And I'd ridden enough that I could do that. And I was like, oh, man.
Yeah. I'd ridden for all of 3.5 minutes.
Oh, she hated me for that. She said, "Don't you ever do that again. You always tell me first." Mm. I said, "Well, that wouldn't be any fun." It was funny.
It was.
Beating on that helmet and on my shoulders and back. And
everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.
It's good that you've been able to either put stuff behind you, but be able to deal with it.
After I worked with Larry, I dealt with it. Before, I just hit it.
Right.
And, you know, kind of brushed it aside. And I think I'm better for it.
Sure.
I mean, I never talked about it before.
Sure.
And I think I'm better for discussing it with Larry and putting it aside.
Right.
Dealing with it.
Right.
I mean, it's got its place. I mean, Monday had a presentation case. Did I ever show you that? Had all my decorations in it.
I heard about it. I don't think I ever saw it.
We had it out on the shelf in the living room for a while. She wanted to put it out on the shelf. And so one day I told her, I said, "We need to put that away." Mm-hmm. And she said, "Why?" And I said, "Well," she says, "aren't you proud of that?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I'm proud of it, Linda." I says, "But you got to remember about all the memories that brings back." Mm-hmm. I says, "Every one of those decorations is good for bringing back bad memories." And she says, "I don't understand." And I said, "Well," I said, "my opinion is you get a decoration for reasons, and your reasons would be," she says, "well, you did something brave and stuff." I said, "Well, see, therein lies the fallacy." I says, "I've heard all kinds of excuses on TV for getting decorations. I was doing my duty to God and country and acting as I felt an officer in the United States Army should," and
right,
crap like that. And I said, "They gave me decorations, and I can tell you why I got them." And I said, "Sure as hell it wasn't because I was brave." I said, "It's because I got scared. I thought I was going to die, and I figured if somebody didn't jump up and do something really quick, I was going to die." And I says, I was so scared about crap my pants. And I says, but I had to do something. And, oh, well, you're brave. I'm not brave. I just want to live.
Right.
I'm not a brave man. I mean,
right.
I don't back down, but that doesn't make you what I would consider in that situation. I was just scared.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anybody tells me that they weren't scared over there, I don't believe that.
Right.
Because I knew everybody in my outfit figured we was going to die.
Right.
So tell me somebody that isn't afraid of dying.
Right.
I mean, there's a certain time you come to your life, you realize that it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Some people put that away. And I met Linda, and it's been the best 9.5 years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to die now.
Right.
You know, I'm having fun with her.
Right.
And so... But I guess I'd look at it was, if I was going to die, I'd have to say my life was turmoil and chaos and out of control. And I met Linda and everything's peaceful. I don't worry about anything. And it's great being with her.
Right.
So, you know, now I have reservations about the end.
That's good. You want to put it off for a little bit longer?
Yeah, I'd like to put it off.
Before you're expecting it any minute, and now it's like, I can wait a couple more years.
Yeah, I've done enough stupid stuff in my life that I can turn around and look at it and say, oh, why did I ever do that? You know? I've done some tight demos for people with parachutes and flags hanging off of me, and I get on the ground, I look up and I says, well, that wasn't exactly the way it was supposed to go, but it worked.
Right.
And jumped into Marceline, Missouri in downtown, right on Main Street for Walt Disney's 100th birthday. And they took all the cross wires down going across the street.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't tell us they didn't take the streets running lineal with the street.
So you had to come in a certain way. You were in a clothesline, literally.
Well, I come in fairly high, and my idea is doing an accuracy jump. You come in high and sink in.
Mm.
So I thought, well, maybe I better wear my fast parachute today. Maybe I better jump that today. And it's fast, and the wind was blowing like hell, so we jumped. We were about 2.5 miles out of town when we jumped.
Mm-hmm.
And first guy has got a state senator and a congressman coming down the street in a car, and he overshoots the target and about lands in the grill of the congressman's car. And the other guy's below me, and he says, go for it, Randy, I'm short. I thought, oh, well. I went down, stepped on the X, and this kid runs out, going to grab the flag. I already got the flag in my hand. I says, don't step on my parachute lines. And he looks down, here's all these lines. He goes, how do I do that? I says, very carefully. Because he ran in while the parachute was still
closed. Right, and then it landed on the ground.
And I said, don't step on my lines. And he says, how am I going to do that? I says, very carefully. So I picked the lines up and put him outside the line, mm-hmm. so he was okay. But that was a pretty tight demo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a big town. And jumped into the ballpark at Burlington, Iowa. That's fairly tight.
Mm-hmm.
And then several years I jumped into homecoming and parents' day at Western Illinois University, and that's not tight, but it can be difficult because it's down in a hole.
Okay.
So one day the winds are about 50 mile an hour, and I went down to the stadium floor and I released some balloons. I bought black ones. And they go up about 300 feet, 400 feet, woof, gone.
Straight across.
So I told the jumpers, I says, you go. I said, this is the way it is. If you're going to land in the middle of the center of the field, you're going to have to set up over the end zone at about 300 feet. As soon as the wind quits, you're going to take off like a rocket.
Mm.
This one guy, he's an old-time jumper. Okay. And I thought, don't screw with it. You're going to lose. And everybody else went down and landed in the middle of the field, and he about landed in a band at the other end of the field because he didn't believe me. He walked up and he looked at me. He says, am I still on the demo team? I says, only if you agree to do as you're told. And then we had one day, it was cloudy and really nasty, and we jumped at 1,500 feet for him. And I mean, it was like,
that's open up. Short. That's not very high at all, right?
No, not really. Better hope the parachute works.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's almost.
Is there even time for the reserve at that point?
if you're quick, you better be real quick.
You better screw up quick, because otherwise you don't have a chance.
Yeah. Well, I've done, like I said, I've done some stuff that I've had to look back on and say that was really stupid.
Yeah.
You know, but I was having fun at the time.
So. Yeah, it was good then.
And you got to learn, I guess, if you're considered a professional, you have to know where the edge is.
Mm.
And that's basically how I was. I knew that I could jump at 1,500 feet or I wouldn't have done it.
Right.
There was a couple guys stayed in the plane, didn't jump. The old guy and I got out, we both lay in the center of the field that day, and we got down, and gal I was dating at the time, she is all pissy and everything. She said, well, the plane was right at the bottom of the clouds. You saw you guys come out, you look like you were right there. I said, we were. She was all pissy. I said, well, if you can't handle the heat, don't get in the frying pan. Jump right out in the fire like I did.
Right.
And it, you know, it's people, when you take the money and you make sign the contract, people expect to see you jump.
Sure.
It's a job then. It's not a sport then. It's a job.
Right.
You better know what you're doing.
Right. And if you don't do it, you're not going to get the next job.
That's right. And I was a rated pro jumper. Mm-hmm. I'd jump into Comiskey Park or Wrigley Field or Kansas City, Royal Stadium, any of those places. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty rigorous. You have to make five jumps and you have to land on the target all five jumps in all situations. The last one, the conference director really put the pressure on. He says, you land right here on the asphalt. I landed right there on the asphalt. Okay.
Got your seal of approval?
Yep, seal of approval. Now you know enough, you can go out and be stupid and get killed. And it's, you know, it's just like anything else. If you push the limits and your capabilities and step outside of your own limitations, you're going to get hurt.
Sure.
And it's just, you just have to know what your limitations are and say, oh, there's the edge.
Right.
Sometimes you look back and say, oh, crap.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
Maybe I shouldn't have gone that far.
Yeah.
But
no, I got away with
there's
it
a lot of people that don't push it at all. They're just comfortable to be where they are and sit there, and that's okay. But it takes...
Well, the thing I always felt about finding the edge and knowing where the limitations were, sometimes when you go beyond and you get away with it, you're smarter.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, yeah, I know right where that's at. Guy that never knows where the edge, when he gets there, it's not, I know where that's at, it's, oh crap, I'm screwed.
Right.
Because he never knows where the edge is.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to go to the edge and see where the edge is and look over and look down and not see anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Get out there and there's nothing under you, then it's a little bit different. But, you know, you got to have faith in your ability and your equipment. You know what everything will do, and then
sure.
A lot of times you get over the edge. I've been over the edge, and my equipment's taking care of me with my expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of miss jumping a little bit, but I don't mind doing that for Linda.
Yeah.
She's been the solidifying and stabilizing factor the last 9 years of my life or so. It's really good.
It really seems like it. You know, I've known you, I think, about that length of time. So mm-hmm. You probably started at the karate school. You and I met each other right about the same time that you probably met.
Yeah, I met Linda just before I started at the karate school.
Okay. It was around the same time.
And it's kind of neat, really.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter had gone to college, and I raised her from the time she was 5 and a half by myself with intermediate interference from her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And she turned out pretty good. Well, she went to college, and I was kind of sitting there with nothing to do, so I went to one of those online dating services and put my had a friend of mine that was a professional photographer take some pictures of me and put them on there, and it said employment. I said gainfully employed for 27 years. And mm-hmm. Transportation, because you don't want to drive a train, you know.
Right, right, right.
That's and so
everyone thinks you're wearing a riding in a caboose and wearing a.
Yeah, well, sometimes I think railroaders are like sailors. They got a gal in every port, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and I put out I was a casual drinker and non-smoker and worked out, did karate, and rode a Harley. So I said, I'd like to have somebody to ride the Harley with, go out to dinner, movies, dancing, mm-hmm. have a good time. And then it says sex. So I was being a smartass. I put anything goes. You know. And I had some dandies answer, but then I had been looking at Linda's profile for about 2 weeks, mm-hmm. maybe three. Mm-hmm. And I got home one day, and there was an email from her. And just looked like in a picture she posted was with somebody, a son or somebody she was dancing with. Looked like she's having a good time being fun. Mm-hmm. And so we emailed back and forth for a week or two, and then we... started doing the instant message thing, and
sure.
Then one night I said, well, you want to put a voice with the message? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, I'll give you my number, and then you can call me, and that way if you don't want to talk to me anymore, I won't have your number. So I forgot I'd gotten caller ID. Mm-hmm. And so she called me, and we talked so long that I had to up the minutes on my phone. I went through like five batteries. We talked like 5 hours, and I was just, and first time I saw her, I knew it was over. And it's been great. She's a great lady.
That's great.
Puts up with the railroad and me. She's got to be fairly decent.
Yes, absolutely.
Railroad and karate and hunting and fishing, and it's just, she's quite a gal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you stayed with our four kids.
Yeah, babysat for you guys.
Yeah, all four German short hairs.
Yeah.
They're good now. I can get on it, and they get right on it. They know.
Yeah, they weren't quite as good when I had them. So, yeah, they were. They'd let them all out, and they'd tear around the house and go outside. But they're all right. You know, I when I was there, I couldn't get the. I put the shock collar on them the first couple times, mm-hmm. and then I realized they came to me every time I called them anyway. And so I don't think after the first couple times, I was careful, but I didn't need to put it on them as much.
Probably wouldn't have been any good. We found out the batteries weren't any good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we just had them all replaced. Linda put the control down someplace and never has been able to find it. Mm. So we had to order a new control, and they told us all the batteries were bad.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen here.
So they're just coming back. Even if you tapped it, they're coming back out of the goodness of their heart.
Yeah. Yeah, poor old farties up there pushing a button. We'll go back and make it easy on them.
Right, right. So,
but yeah, I'd probably say, I told Linda, we were sitting there that night, and I said, we got a really good life. Mm-hmm. And she knew I was coming over here. She's a gal. We ride the bike, go to Sturgis. Been there 5 years, and this year we ventured on out to Yellowstone. And, mm-hmm. 3,500 miles in 12 days.
Nice short ride.
Well, you got to realize that when somebody climbs on one of those machines behind you, it's kind of like jumping out of an airplane on your chest. Mm-hmm. They're trusting with your life.
Right.
That's a pretty neat feeling to know that somebody trusts you that much. I told her, I said, you're really confused. I got you fooled.
Yeah.
And so, she's gutsy, boy. She likes to go on that bike, I tell you. She came over the first time when I had the deuce. It was supposed to be about 45 degrees that day, and turned out to be about 10 above zero. And I says, you want to go for a ride today? She says, I come 140 miles to go for a ride on a motorcycle. We're going for a ride on a motorcycle. I said, oh, crap. So I put insulated coveralls on her and one of my leather coats and a full face helmet and ski gloves and everything I could to make her warm. And I put on insulated underwear and leather pants, leather chaps, insulated shirt, insulated hood, sweatshirt, and then put my leather coat on over that, and full face helmet.
Didn't have your snowmobile gear with you that day?
She had it on. I don't have a snowmobile, but yeah. I put the heavier stuff on her, and yeah. It was so cold, I'd actually put my hand down right on the engine, on the cylinders, to get my hands warm. And I'd alternate hands, and it wouldn't burn my hands. It was that cold. And we rode 100 miles.
Wow.
And she was tickled to death.
10 degrees?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
And I just like...
I would not have been on that bike with you, Randy.
Thank you. I don't usually ride guys. I let them stay home.
Yeah.
I always get a kick out of it. We're Sturgis or someplace and see two guys on the same bike. I giggle, I said, look at here, Linda. Too bad the bike ain't purple.
Right.
Should have said that.
All right, and that does it for my interview with Randy Alley. I'd just like to thank Randy again for taking the time to sit down and share some of the stories with us. And hopefully Randy will come back again in the near future and share some more stories about our adventures together. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week. Mataya. Everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.